A1 Insights Podcast. Stay up to date with the latest trends in education and training from the leaders in perinatal nursing education. Here's your host, Sophia Navard.
Hi everyone, welcome to A1 Insights. I'm your host, Sophia Navard, and today's show is titled Multimodal Pain Management, Reducing Opioid Use After Cesarean Birth. According to a quality improvement initiative to reduce opioid consumption after cesarean birth by Dr. Adrienne Burgess, Amy Harris, Julia Wheeling, and Roni Dermo, 1 in 300 opioid-naive women become addicted to opiates after cesarean birth. Also after cesarean, women are often prescribed more opiates at discharge than necessary, resulting in increased opportunity for diversion. In order to learn more about this study, we are joined today by two of the authors, Dr. Adrienne Burgess and Amy Harris, who will share their insights on the effects of the opioid epidemic in the perinatal space and alternative comfort strategies for pain management post-cesarean. Welcome, Dr. Adrienne Burgess and Amy Harris.
Thank you. Hi, Sophia. Thank you so much for having us. We're really excited to be here today to talk about this topic.
Oh, my pleasure. All right, we'll start with Adrienne. Tell us a bit about yourself and your clinical nursing background.
I've been a nurse for about 23 years, working clinically in a variety of maternal child settings like labor and delivery. I worked at maternal fetal medicine and in childbirth education. I taught OB nursing to undergraduate nursing students for a number of years, but most recently I work as the program director for the Women's and Children's Service Line for WellSpan Health.
Awesome. Thank you. All right. And Amy, tell us a bit about yourself and your clinical nursing background.
Sure. I have been a nurse for 19 years. I've also done a variety of nursing, ranging from long-term care to adult neuro, until I found my home in women's and children's nursing. And I've been working in women's and children's service line for about 14 years. I've been a bedside nurse. And most recently, I am currently holding the position of clinical educator for maternity and labor and delivery.
Wonderful. Thank you. We're happy to have you both. All right, now let's get started. So Adrienne, can you give us a brief overview of the ways in which the opioid epidemic manifests itself in the perinatal space?
So Sophia, I think that as healthcare providers, we're all very aware of the negative impacts that opioid use disorder has on pregnancy and neonatal outcomes. And over the past several years, we've seen increasing rates of overdose deaths among women, increasing rates of opioid use disorder among pregnant women, and increasing rates of NAS. So I don't think that anyone who's listening to this podcast is, you know, that's news to any of them. We knew that within our health system that we had efforts in place to ensure that pregnant women had access to medication-assisted therapy. We also knew that our health system had a process in place to provide support to these women post-birth. We were very lucky in that we had some really great advocates for this vulnerable population. We knew that we had started some work standardizing screening related to opioid use disorder in our prenatal care setting. And at the time of our project, we also knew that our neonatal care team was implementing best practices in the care of newborns with NAS, and they were working to implement Eat, Sleep, Console model. So we knew that all this was going on around the care of women with opioid use disorder. But one day, we were at Grand Round, my colleague Julia Wheeling, who was another author on this paper, and that's when we heard the quote that you referenced at the beginning of this article, that approximately 1 in 300 opioid-naive women will become persistent prescription opioid users following cesarean delivery. And that's actually from a larger article by Dr. Brian Bateman. And, you know, that was really shocking to us. We felt like we knew that we were in the midst of this opioid epidemic, and as nurses, really our focus needed to be on prevention. We knew that Amy was really passionate about this topic because previously Amy had actually reached out to me about this and, you know, actually being really thoughtful about how we were providing opioids to women after cesarean section. And so we quickly, after hearing that statistic, I still remember it, we ran up to her on the maternity floor and asked her, you know, if she wanted to be involved in a project to start to look at this and address how we, as nurses, address pain and comfort after C-section. So for us, really, the stars were aligning at that moment, really creating the ideal environment for success of a quality improvement project. Because at the same time that we kind of heard this statistic and, you know, really it ignited this passion about the project, our health system was prioritizing the reduction in prescribing of opioids postoperatively of patients at discharge. So they were actually making it a focus for providers that they needed to start really thinking about how much opioid they were prescribing to patients after different surgical procedures. And so we immediately thought that if our providers are going to be kind of held to this standard to start to reduce the amount of opioid prescribed at discharge, as nurses, we needed to support our colleagues and our patients and start to understand, you know, what type of comfort and pain relief strategies should this patient be receiving during their inpatient stay so that they understand how they can promote their comfort once home? Because we knew that, you know, being uncomfortable after a cesarean section doesn't just disappear on day three when you get discharged. So that's kind of where we left off. That's where we were like, okay, we have this idea. You know, what do we do next?
Thank you, Adrienne. All right, and Amy, which modes of pain management are you currently offering at your institution, and which do you find to be the most successful?
When we started this project, we really started let's get down to the meat and potatoes. What are we already doing? And we already had some great things in place. We had scheduled ibuprofen and scheduled Tylenol every 6 hours around the clock. But shockingly, when we really looked at the data and we did the chart audits, we found that nurses weren't really consistently giving the medication as prescribed. It's almost as if we didn't prioritize those medications because they weren't opiates or they weren't severe range pain medication. When we looked at that and we saw there was various reasons, and it wasn't because of neglect of the nurse. It was because either, you know, we're a large tertiary care center. So a lot of our mommies are down in the NICU for a great period of time. So there was reasons like that, or the patient would refuse because the patient has the idea that that never works for me. I need the oxy. So when we saw that it wasn't consistently applied, even though the way it was prescribed, we really focused in on education of not only the patients, but the nurses. And we had them really prioritize these medications, viewing them as a necessity instead of an option. So when we changed that, I think that's when we had the most positive results because we were treating the physiological response to pain. We weren't just masking it with an opiate. So by preventing the inflammation with the ibuprofen, the patients weren't having great pain because of that. We also added several other components. We call it a comfort bundle. We apply all of these steps kind of consistently, or not kind of consistently, for the best results. And we start with preoperative dose of Tylenol. It's an oral dose. Study support giving that dose can help the patient reduce the amount of opiates consumed post-surgery. So we do that over in our L&D setting. Immediately after surgery, they put on an abdominal binder that helps to support the abdomen so it's not pooling on that incision that's raw for them at that moment. We give the Tylenol and ibuprofen every 6 hours. We've actually started using chewing gum. So we had some studies that supported chewing gum helps you get to first flatus. Passing gas is so important when you've had this major abdominal surgery. The gas can kind of radiate up to the shoulder, to the jaw, and it actually is one of the biggest complaints we have from our cesarean patients. So chewing that gum has made a big difference. Additionally, we have early ambulation. We try to get our patients out of bed within the first 6 hours. Again, that's working towards stretching those muscles, getting that flatus to pass for us. And it just helps with the overall well-being with the patient.
And the one thing I would add in is this addition of simethicone.
Oh, yes.
We did some baseline kind of assessment of what we
what medications we were giving and to our patients. And we knew that postoperative gas pain is one of those things that, you know, is maybe, you know, patients really and nurses may be underestimating how much pain that could actually be causing them. So when we did actually report, we had some data pulled from our Pyxis to look at our utilization of medications, and we had very limited utilization of simethicone. And we made that as part of the standard part of the comfort bundle. So now when nurses are giving Tylenol and ibuprofen standardly, they're also offering a simethicone to our patients. And we encourage nurses to really educate the patients about what the simethicone is going to do to help them. And there's really very few, if any, side effects from simethicone. And so that was a really key piece of this. We do have a few other things that we added in that are not as, I guess they're not as like specific to the comfort bundle that our patients can use. We're really lucky that we actually have a massage therapy team. So patients can get a massage if they would like. We have actually trialed something recently using aromatherapy that was part of a research study using lavender to help decrease anxiety after cesarean section. We have another research study that is going on through our resident team looking at the use of a lidocaine patch versus a pain pump in patients that actually have opioid use disorder that may be at increased use for you know, needing some additional opioids. So that's going on. And one of the other things that we did was work to reduce our prescribing of oxycodone. So when we initially started our project, the order set had an order for oxycodone 5 milligrams or oxycodone 10 milligrams, and it was based on the pain score. What we did was we actually reduced the amount of oxycodone prescribed, so it went to now oxycodone 2.5 milligrams for moderate pain and 5 milligrams for more severe pain with on the pain scale of 7 to 10. So now if a patient does need oxycodone 10 milligrams, they can still get it. It's just the nurse needs to call the provider, you know, to state that additional pain medication is needed.
Another component that I failed to mention was we actually, this is twofold. We centered this whole project on education and collaboration between the whole healthcare team, including the patient. So we did draft a letter that we give to the patient upon arrival to the postpartum unit. And we really talk about keeping them comfortable. I don't want to necessarily say we scripted the nurses, but we've kind of channeled the conversations around, you've just had a major abdominal surgery, you're going to have some discomfort. These are the things we're going to provide and do for you to make you comfortable while you provide care for yourself and your baby. And we didn't promise these patients that they're going to be pain-free. What we did is we kind of assured them that you will be able to provide care for you, yourself, and your baby, and that's our treatment goal. And that has really helped to have our nurses, our patients, and even our providers speak that same language. I see very often the physicians will go in and ask, you know, are you able to comfortably care for yourself and your baby, instead of going in and saying, are you in pain? So that has changed a little bit in our organization as well for the positive.
Wonderful. All right. Thank you both. So for mothers who are opioid dependent, which would you deem to be the best strategies for reducing withdrawal and opioid consumption post-cesarean?
So with these moms, we actually, we have the same treatment regimen for all of our patients post-cesarean. So even if the mom comes in with an existing addiction, we talk to her about pain the way we would talk to a patient who didn't have that same affliction. We assure them that if it gets bad, we can elevate, and it will just require a provider notification, and the provider will come to the bedside. What I have found in my my bedside experience is these ladies are very vulnerable. They feel very judged, and they're very, very fearful about pain. They fear that as healthcare professionals, we are not going to take them seriously when it comes to their concerns about pain. So we provide a lot of emotional support, and we really individualize their plan of care with the help of the provider. We also have ancillary services. We have a pain management group that we can consult if we have to go up to a higher dose of oxycodone if the patient can't find that comfort level. So we have a few different avenues that we can take with these moms.
Thank you. And Adrian or Amy, could you perhaps share some feedback you received from your patients or from nurse learners who have implemented these strategies?
Yeah, I would just say that, you know, some of the things that I remember, you know, when I was at the bedside, and it was actually something that I think really started off this project, that it was really like a light bulb moment for me that spurred our initial data review. So when I was sitting there and I was thinking about this and, you know, thinking about like, what is our process for how we provide, you know, pain management to patients post-cesarean. And, you know, I was thinking like, oh, well, you know, you think when you get report from another nurse, you know, sometimes the nurse would say to you, oh, this person typically takes one oxycodone, or this person takes two oxycodone. And it made me think, well, what's our process for, you know, tapering this? If we keep giving report to each other and we're telling the next nurse, this is how much, are we really assessing the patient's need for continued use of oxycodone? And what we did was, you know, kind of with that idea of what's our taper strategy? How do we do this? If we're trying to set a patient up to be able to go home on really no narcotics or, you know, definitely minimal oxycodone, then how are we preparing them, you know, at the bedside? So we had our pharmacists run data for us on use of our oxycodone out of our Pyxis. So I'm sure any of the nurses out there who are on their unit could get this data from their pharmacy. It comes out with an Excel spreadsheet, and they actually send it to me every month so we can track it. And so we didn't have any idea how much oxycodone we used. We just, it was a guess to us. We really couldn't even have possibly imagined. And so when we started this project, we thought, let's pull data on our oxycodone use and we'll see, are we using, you know, 10 milligrams often? How often are we giving 10 milligram oxycodone? How often are we giving 5 milligram? Are patients taking 10 milligrams up to right before they're discharged? And so when we got this data back, we were pretty surprised. At least I was surprised. I don't know if Amy was, but I was pretty surprised, because we noticed that patients were taking 10 milligrams of oxycodone every 4 hours, sometimes up to the right before they're being discharged. We didn't really have a strategy around tapering. You know, patients, if the patients asked for it, you know, we may just give them the oxycodone. We didn't really talk about, we weren't using simethicone, because what if the pain isn't actually visceral pain, it's actually gas pain? It's very hard to kind of articulate that difference, or you might not even understand that difference. So when we first looked at this and we pulled the data, our baseline was 44,000, approximately 44,000 MMEs over a quarter. And so we really didn't know what that meant. Was that a lot? Was that a little bit? We just knew that was our baseline. But we did think that we had room for improvement, because we could see that, you know, patients were not being tapered down. And if we're trying to get to this goal of, you know, kind of appropriate prescribing at discharge, patients aren't going to be discharged any longer with, you know, with 10 milligrams of oxycodone to take for days and days. And if we didn't provide them with education and strategies outside of oxycodone as methods of comfort and pain relief, then, you know, we knew we needed to improve. So that's kind of how, that was the impetus for us to come up with this comfort bundle and this education to our patients. And so I think, you know, one of the things that I would recommend to all the nurses that are out there listening to this is, where can you start on your unit if you haven't already, is to know
know what you're doing right now. Try to figure that out. And asking your pharmacy to send you that report, because you might be really surprised at how you're using opioids. And then know your data on the utilization of comfort strategies like the binder, like Tylenol and ibuprofen, like simethicone. We pulled that, we abstracted data on all of that, and we were surprised, like Amy had mentioned, that we weren't utilizing that to its fullest. So, you know, I think that we had this dramatic, we just actually checked right before we came this week on the podcast, and the last quarter, we were down to 6,592 MMEs. So we went from at our baseline, 44,000 MMEs, down to 6,592 MMEs provided to our patients, of approximately the same volume of you know, cesarean section patients throughout that time period. So it's an 85% reduction. And, you know, that was alarming to us, because I will say we were like, wow, you know, are we sacrificing pain relief, pain control? You know, are patients satisfied with their care? Because we don't want to withhold. That was our big message to our nurses. Like, we do not want you to withhold opioids. That's not what this is about. It's just about making sure we're offering a complement of pain relief strategies. And, you know, so just so everyone knows, in order to balance that in the face of such a significant reduction, we did a variety of things to make sure we were like really on the pulse of what patients were feeling. Number one, we did, we looked at scores from HCAHPS around patient satisfaction with pain control and track those over time. They recently stopped asking that question on HCAHPS, but we tracked those at the beginning of our project. Then we have a nurse who makes phone calls on the unit to patients just to kind of check in. And we added a question about their satisfaction with their pain control, just to, again, have another way to check in. The nurse manager on the unit does leader rounds with the nurses, just to ask them, you know, how's everything going? And, you know, and obviously Amy is touching base with the nurses all the time to see how patients are, you know, if they're comfortable, if they're having any, you know, complaints or concerns. And our patient satisfaction scores, you know, stayed between stable and going up at different times during the project. So we did not see a reduction in those and did not receive any, you know, really any feedback about patients being uncomfortable through our phone calls and leader rounds. Amy, do you have anything else to say about that?
Our nurse managers actually do patient rounding as well. Oh. So they were given a daily opportunity to express if they weren't happy with their pain control. Very seldom in the very beginning, we did have a few cases where it was the perception of the patient from the nurse that we have an opiate project, we're trying to restrict the medication. And we did some re-education with the nurses, some re-education with the patients, and those issues were resolved very quickly. I think the catapult for our success with this project really is the nurse engagement. And we were able to kind of feed off of that engagement and build upon that, almost like a snowball effect, with very small integration of steps at first. Like, I believe the first thing we did was the simethicone. And believe it or not, nurses love data. So when we were able to present to them at daily huddles, hey, look, you know, we only use this amount of tabs for, you know, this time period. Now that you're giving it consistently, we've actually used this amount of tablets, and look at what's happening with your patients and your opiates and, you know, the utilization of the opiates. And they were able to see that direct connection from a nursing intervention that they themselves did to have such a positive effect on something that has become an epidemic. I think every single one of us as nurses, as citizens, know somebody, a loved one in our immediate family or extended family. When you talk about diversion and these women taking these medications home, that where it gets out to the community, to our children. So we had such great buy-in, and our nurses kind of protect this comfort bundle with such virtue. You know, when we have a physician that maybe puts in an erroneous order for too much oxy, boy, those nurses, they let them know right away. They let me know right away. And they're very anxious to keep our patients on this program because they believe in it so much.
And I would say our physicians also were extremely engaged in this project, which also added to the success of it. So as I mentioned at the beginning, the physicians were kind of, they were working on the other side of this, where they had to start to assess how much they were prescribing at discharge. And another piece of this was we started to look at the data associated with, you know, okay, what is the number of tabs that this patient is being prescribed at discharge? And how much did the patient, how much oxycodone did the patient take during their stay? And what we saw was that there were many times when patients were being prescribed 30 tabs of, you know, 20, 30 tabs of oxycodone at discharge and took no oxycodone during their stay. And so what we found was that we really needed to look at our Epic workflows. And there was some kind of sometimes just this workflow where we would just automatically put in, you know, a standard number of tabs. And we really educated our residents and our providers about going through and looking at, well, if the patient went through and went through their entire hospital stay and did not need to take any oxycodone, do they need to go home with some? And if they did, that's fine. But just have a conversation with the patient about, you know, okay, you know, yes, maybe they have a long drive home or they have lots of stairs in their house or, you know, some other circumstances that, you know, they need some additional pain relief. Completely fine. But just making sure that you're talking about prescribing these medications in concert with conversation about the patient, about their needs for pain relief. So that was really another piece of this. So, you know, when I said that this was kind of like the perfect storm to come together for something to work really well, we had really great engagement from nurses, providers, so that, you know, and administration. So it's really a shout out to the entire team for the success of this project.
It really is. And that leadership support was very important. I wanted to express that too. They didn't balk when we said, hey, can we order 5 cases of chewing gum? You know, they would like raise their eyebrows and say, sure, we'll give it a go. But we really, really did have a tremendous support from all team members for the success of the program.
Awesome. Thank you both. All right. So as we come to a close, what tips would you offer to our nurses who are thinking of implementing these alternative comfort strategies at their institutions?
Mm-hmm. So for the nurses that want to implement the strategies, I have to go back to what Adrian kind of emphasize that figure out what you're doing now and how you're applying it and look for a variation. If you have a lot of variation, look into why. You know, is it a process issue? Is it a workflow issue? Is it a lack of availability issue? And really look into the evidence-based research that supports these comfort modalities that we mentioned, like the chewing gum, the simethicone, the binder, early ambulation, and education. As far as a nurse educator to inspire your nurses, share the data, let them celebrate those small victories, working on your way towards the bigger victory. Start small with one intervention at a time and then continue to do audits and really let the data speak for itself. Nurses understand data. We really enjoy seeing the difference that we make. That would be my advice.
Yeah, I would just echo that. And, you know, Amy knows how much I love data. So I think that, you know, starting out and understanding your baseline is so key to this because we had no idea how much, how much opioid we were providing, or even if that was a good thing or a bad thing, or even if we could go, you know, even if we could go less, you know, if that would be appropriate or not. But once we started to realize that we weren't using the other strategies standardly that we even already had ordered, like the binder and the Tylenol and the ibuprofen, we knew that there was a way to improve this. And now, just to kind of add to this, we within our health system, we have several other birthing hospitals. And this started at our largest birthing hospital, York Hospital, and now has extended. And we have seen the same success at all of our facilities. So it just goes to show that this is something that can be replicated kind of right out of the box, because all of these things are kind of easy to do. Nothing is challenging. You know, none of these things are hard. Using the binder, it's something that you know, all facilities have already in their storerooms, the simethicones, you know, already in the Pyxis. It's just making sure that you really use it like a bundle. The more pieces of a bundle that you use, the better impact you're going to see. So you can't just kind of pick and choose. You want to try to use all of those things. And I think the patient education piece, you know, as nurses, we're like the best at that. You know, we're so good at patient education and really making sure patients understand that when they go home, they need to continue these things. It doesn't stop at discharge. When they go home, it's even going to be harder because now they have to walk up and down the steps of their house and take care of maybe other children and kind of get back to normal life. But they still have that, you know, C-section, you know, incision that's there that is going to be uncomfortable. So making sure they understand to still take that Tylenol and ibuprofen, you know, regularly, not to stop, you know, to keep using the binder if that was working for them and comfortable, and to, you know, use simethicone because that could be helpful with gas pain and to keep moving around. So the education piece was also a big gap and kind of a blind spot for us that, you know, we knew that we might be addressing these things in the hospital, but we realized that on our discharge education, we really didn't have, we really did not have a spot to provide this really specific education on comfort modalities. So that's something that I think you could look for as a nurse on a unit who's looking to improve this.
All right. Thank you. Well, Amy and Adrian, thank you again for all of your hard work and dedication to caring for mothers and babies. And thank you for taking the time out of your hectic schedules to share your insights with our listeners today.
Thank you.
It's been a pleasure. Thank you.
Being asked.
Anytime. All right. And to all of our listeners, please note that this information is not intended to replace a consultation with your provider. You may also visit our website at awon.org for additional resources, including our perioperative care of the pregnant woman evidence-based guidelines. As always, if you're having an emergency, please dial 911. Until we meet again, remember that we are all stronger together. This has been Sophia Navard for A1 Insights.